Si quieres comunicarte con nosotros, puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblosinfronteras@gmail.com.
Continuamos con noticias de Estados Unidos. Esta semana, un comité del Consejo de la Ciudad de Los Ángeles, en California, aprobó una moción que plantea prohibir la polémica técnica de fragmentación hidráulica, conocida como fracking, para extraer gas y petróleo del subsuelo. La moción todavía deberá ser debatida por el Pleno del Consejo Angelino. Anaís Hinojosa tiene más detalles sobre la audiencia del martes.
Durante la audiencia, el concejal Mike Bonin dijo al Comité de Planificación de Uso de la Tierra que fracking está ocurriendo en la ciudad sin supervisión alguna para asegurarse de que la práctica no es dañina para los vecindarios. Stephen Macon es un estudiante de periodismo interesado en que el público se entere sobre el impacto real de fracking en la ciudad de Los Ángeles.
They have to dump that wastewater and they re-inject it into the ground and it's been linked to earthquakes and other...
Él dice que el agua que ha sido mezclada con químicos y reintroducida en los pozos han sido vinculados con temblores en la tierra en otras partes del país. Estas actividades son causa de preocupación, especialmente en el occidente de las calles Adams en Huntington Park, el corredor de la avenida Figueroa y en University Park. En este último se enfermaron los investigadores de la Agencia de Protección al Medio Ambiente. La fragmentación hidráulica consiste en inyectar dentro de la tierra agua mezclada con químicos con el fin de permitir la salida de petróleo y gas atrapados en el subsuelo. Nick Ortiz, de la Asociación de Estados Petroleros del Occidente, fue citada en un diario local diciendo que está probado que la técnica de fragmentación hidráulica es segura y que esta nunca ha sido asociada a ningún caso de contaminación del agua del subsuelo. De nuevo, Stephen Macon.
Big concern for everybody, of course, is earthquakes in Oklahoma and Ohio. The USGS has linked them.
Macon señala que también en los estados de Oklahoma y Ohio, agencias del gobierno han vinculado el agua reintroducida en los pozos con los temblores de tierra. Lewin Fox, del Consejo Vecinal del Norte Arbor Gateway, asegura que en sus barrios las paredes se están desmoronando y las banquetas se están quebrando debido al fracking.
They've been using acids here, hydrofluoric acid, to melt the rocks, literally.
Stephen Macon señala que las empresas han usado ácidos hidrofluóricos en sus operaciones de fracking con el fin de derretir las rocas del subsuelo. Y eso es bastante perturbante, pues esos ácidos han sido vinculados con accidentes por todo el mundo. Agrega que las actividades de exploración de petróleo han sido vinculadas con el colapso de la presa local, el mismo que quitará la vida a 5 personas y destruirá 65 casas. La moción presentada por los concejales Paul Koretz y Mike Bonin prohíbe los métodos de simulación de pozos hasta que el Consejo de la Ciudad verifique que el pueblo de Los Ángeles y su reserva de agua y propiedades no sean afectadas por el fracking. De acuerdo a Stephen Macon, el alcalde de la ciudad le ha informado que él también está contra de la fragmentación hidráulica, el fracking. Activistas esperan que el Consejo de la Ciudad apruebe el viernes los nuevos reglamentos que prohíben fragmentación hidráulica hasta que la entidad legislativa local considere que son seguras. En Los Ángeles, para el Informativo Pacífico, informo Anaís Hinojosa.
En Argentina inició un juicio por la represión ocurrida hace 13 años durante las protestas contra el gobierno de Fernando de la Rúa. La información con Pepe Frutos del Foro Argentino de Radios Comunitarias, Farco.
En Argentina, luego de más de 12 años, comenzó el juicio oral y público por la represión de diciembre de 2001 en la ciudad de Buenos Aires. En todo el país fueron asesinadas por la policía y otras fuerzas de seguridad casi 40 personas en las horas previas a la caída del gobierno de Fernando de la Rúa. El juicio que comenzó ayer es por 5 asesinatos en la ciudad de Buenos Aires y por las heridas que recibieron casi 120 personas víctimas de aquella represión. Los acusados son 17. El único funcionario civil es el exsecretario de Seguridad, Enrique Matoff. También está el ex jefe de la Policía Federal, Rubén Santos, y los otros 15 imputados son comisarios de esa fuerza. Dos cosas importantes hacen que este juicio no sea completo para los familiares de las víctimas. Por un lado, que no esté en el banquillo de los acusados el expresidente Fernando de la Rúa, quien fue sobreseído por la justicia, y por otro lado, que la pena máxima que vayan a enfrentar los acusados sea de apenas 5 años de prisión. Esto último porque la acusación no es por haber reprimido y matado con intención, sino por haberlo hecho en forma no intencional. El testimonio de Juan Manuel Cárdenas, el hijo de Jorge Cárdenas, el primer baleado en la madrugada del 20 de diciembre en las escalinatas del Congreso Nacional y cuya foto recorrió el mundo.
La expectativa y lo que esperamos es que se haga justicia, que mató Santo y de la Rúa, que tiene que estar sentado acá, que él fue el que dio la orden, que vaya al estado de sitio y que saquen toda la gente de la plaza, que digamos, en su momento esto se podía haber premeditado, porque a mi papá lo balean a las 2:30 de la mañana del 20 de diciembre, fue el primero y a bala de plomo. Se ven en una filmación de un canal de aire donde sale el policía y le dispara a mi papá. Y después vinieron todos los otros muertos. Acá hay filmaciones, hay fotos. Yo tengo fotos de un fotógrafo cuando estaba mi papá tirado en la escalinata del Congreso y los mismos policías que habían disparado lo estaban ayudando. Y bueno, acá se tiene la pelota uno al otro. Yo espero que sea justicia y para mí es un dolor muy grande estar acá y que de la Rúa esté sentado donde tiene que estar porque él fue el que dio la orden. Y bueno, y mató a Santo y los policías que estuvieron en la escalinata del Congreso.
La palabra de uno de los familiares de las víctimas de diciembre de 2001, en aquellos días en que cayó el gobierno de Fernando de la Rúa. Se espera que declaren unos 500 testigos y que dure cerca de 2 años este juicio que llegó 12 años después de sucedidos los hechos. Es la información desde Farco en Argentina.
El representante en México de la Alta Comisionada de la ONU para los Derechos Humanos expresó preocupación por el surgimiento de autodefensas en ese país.
La violencia en México se ha cobrado decenas de miles de vidas en los últimos 7 años. Los carteles del crimen organizado han ganado cada vez más poder y la población ha quedado a menudo atrapada en territorios dominados por la delincuencia, sufriendo sistemáticamente extorsiones, secuestros y toda clase de atropellos a los derechos humanos. La guerra declarada por el gobierno a las bandas criminales a finales de 2006 sacó al ejército a las calles de zonas controladas por el narco sin que el entorno de seguridad mejorara. Luego de 6 años de vivir en este escenario, empezaron a insurgir principalmente en el estado de Michoacán movimientos comunitarios civiles armados, algunos de los cuales se llaman a sí mismos autodefensas. Esta semana se cumplió el primer año de movilización de esas agrupaciones, que por cierto, no son únicas en el país. Javier Hernández Valencia, representante en México de la Alta Comisionada de la ONU para los Derechos Humanos, conversó con Radio ONU sobre la complejidad de este fenómeno. En primer lugar, explicó que el elemento común es que los actores comunitarios en Michoacán han roto con el monopolio del uso legítimo de la fuerza por parte del Estado, pero que no todos operan sobre bases homogéneas, lo que supone mucha prudencia a la hora de entenderlos y abordarlos.
No se puede entrar allí con solo el uso de la fuerza sin entender las complejidades de los tejidos sociales que han sido aceptados en cada localidad, que son diferentes. Sin embargo, eso lleva también a ser cuidadoso en a quienes se elige como aliados y a quienes no, inclusive a quienes se elige como aliados en un primer momento, pero que no se extiende como aliados estratégicos hasta el final del camino y con el mismo rol a lo largo de todo el proceso. Hay lugares en donde las autodefensas no han surgido como tales, en el sentido de movimientos comunitaristas contestatarios a el dominio ostensible del crimen organizado. Pero el crimen organizado allí tiene también una cierta aceptación social, no ha sido tan activamente abusivo y por lo tanto tan evidentemente rechazado. Restituir el orden en una comunidad así, entonces, es diferente porque, aunque nos plantea obviamente los retos del imperativo legal y moral de no tener que negociar con una organización del crimen organizado como tal, sí nos obliga a abrir vasos de comunicación con esas comunidades, esas localidades, esas sociedades civiles que le han dado su sostén y que en algún momento inclusive no solo apoyo, sino hasta legitimidad.
En este contexto, es imperativo que la prudencia guíe la estrategia para lidiar con las autodefensas, apuntó.
Parte de las perspectivas, no solo de de Naciones Unidas desde nuestra adhesión al Estado de Derecho, al principio el control del uso legítimo de la fuerza pública por el Estado, también por razones políticas y humanitarias, es que haya mucha prudencia en el tratamiento de este fenómeno para evitar un baño de sangre, para evitar que todos estemos de acuerdo en que debe haber monopolio del uso de la fuerza y que el Estado de Derecho deba reimponerse. Deduzcamos que esa restitución se debe hacer con un uso implacable de la fuerza del Estado y con los costos humanos que ello requiera.
Carla García, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Anaís Hinojosa y del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
FCC agencies, David Dunn is one of them.
Is there a problem?
How about the FCC? Have you heard of the FCC fucking CCC?
And what's your name?
Expanding, you shithead. Where's my bourbon?
And do you have a card or any kind of identification so we even know who you are?
I am evil. Evil existed long before God.
Well, I didn't see it. How do I know?
Leave me alone. You don't know what's going on. None of you know what's going on.
Oh, okay. Well, is there any problems at all I can do?
When you get to hell, don't expect to see me there, my friend. You'll be there alone. I will be there.
So I'm just curious if there's any other problems, if there's interference problems.
The funny thing, I find I have no feelings in my buttock.
Okay. That's all. That's the only reason why you're here.
God damn it, I'd piss on a spark plug if I thought it'd do any good.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Fair enough. Take care. All right, that was FCC agent David Hartshorn and David Dunn.
Music should be free. So should radio. This is Ian from Fugazi, and this is Radio Free Santa Cruz. Music should be free. So should radio.
What's up, what's up? This is Amp Live, and right now you're listening to the uncut, uncensored, doing whatever the hell you want to do, free radio 101.3 in Santa Cruz, online at freakradio.org. Is that correct? I think it is. All right. You're chilling with Augusto Cesar Sandino.
Hey, this is Bill Vacos from the Angry Samoans, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM, and this is Colin.
What's up, everybody?
Woo! Johnny over here. Woo! And I'd be the drummer, and you'd be the guitar player, and he'd be the bass. And thank you. Metal Mike just ran away. Listen.
Where'd we go?
What's up, what's up? This is Amp Live, and right now you're listening to the uncut, uncensored, doing whatever the hell you want to do, free radio 101.3 in Santa Cruz, online at freakradio.org. Is that correct? I think it is. All right. You're chilling with Augusto Cesar Sandino.
And theme, we're still deciding on the theme, so for now, I will play the song I want to hear.
You and I in a little torso, buy a bag of balloons with the money we've got. Set them free at the break of dawn, till one by one they were gone. Back at base, box in the software, flash the message. Something's out there, floating in the summer sky. 99 red balloons go by. We'll be right back.
And what a welcome for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I don't even know who that was, but it had a sweet sound to it. Welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz's Thursday evening show. It's called Bathrop Spears Broadsides. My name's Robert Norris, and I talk about local protests around civil rights issues, particularly as they relate to people outside. And I also go a bit abroad. In fact, we're going to begin this show with picking up on a protest that I have played some audio from, the protest up in San Francisco on January 17th concerning agitation for a homeless bill of rights in the state of California, stuck dead in, not just in committee, it hasn't even been reintroduced, as I understand it, this year. Last year, there was Amiano's homeless bill of rights, which was somewhat weakened, but then stalled, and now is gathering dust, cobwebs, or mold, depending how you want to look at it. But there's still a lot of people concerned with and asserting those rights, both here in Santa Cruz and up in San Francisco. And I'm going to kind of go back to that January 17th march throughout the streets, and other stuff, too. There was an initial hearing for the Santa Cruz 11, the final four folks accused of being in a vacant Wells Fargo leased bank building 2 years ago, having already spent over $100,000 on this political repression. DA Bob Lee wants to spend another $100,000 with a felony trial for four individuals slated to last at least 2 weeks in the court of Judge Paul Burdick, and we'll be hearing more about that. At least I'll be giving you, relaying what I've heard. I wasn't there this morning when the initial kind of readiness hearing was heard, but I did get some reports from co-founder of Food Not Bombs and local activist as well as international activist Keith McHenry, and we'll pass that on to you. In the meantime, why don't we begin with this flashback, not really much of a flashback, it's simply kind of a look back or continuation or finalization of the January 17th Homeless Bill of Rights Day. Protests, rallies, speeches, and like that. You can always call into the show at any time, although I'll probably be trying to monitor what I'm doing here in the station. But you're welcome to call in, and if you have some thoughts, if you have some updates, news, whatever, please do, 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Hopefully our signal will be getting even stronger when I get back to you on Sunday. I do a longer show on Sunday morning. Rumor has it we're going to be boosting our signal, which is good news for all of us. Although, again, we still need money. So if you are loose of change, have some spare change or bucks, we did make about $200 or $300 at the benefit, but rent for 1 month here at our studio is $500. And we don't have a very wealthy gang of broadcasters, and it's the broadcasters who pay for this radio station. We donate. We squeeze money out of each other. We do what we can. We take contributions. And you, the listeners, too, of course. Go to freakradio.org if you want to help, if you want to learn more. Freak Radio, FreakRadio, freakradio.org, and help us out. Let's go now to January 17th's protests and hear some speakers on the issues that concern people worldwide, but particularly statewide, and certainly in Santa Cruz as well.
The good news is we're not stopping. We're not stopping. And I'm excited to share the mic with the next speaker here who's going to talk about what's happening across the state to bring our own Bill of Rights. If they won't pass a Bill of Rights, we'll bring our own on the street.
Right, right, hey. Right on.
Right. Colleen Rebecca from St. Anthony's Foundation.
Colleen is stepping up to speak.
I don't think this is working, but I'm going to use it anyway. All right. Everybody, the best part of my life last year was going by the busload with all of you people. How many of you people went to Sacramento last year? Yeah. Sacramento, that we needed a little bit of right. That was the best.
best part of my life last year. We have to keep doing that. We as a state and also as a West Coast are continuing to work together. We don't need to have a bill that's introduced by a politician because we all know what rights we need, what rights we're being denied, and we know exactly what to ask for. We're still going to continue asking Sacramento and educating all of our policymakers and leaders about what's going on in homeless people's lives, that they're getting arrested for things like sitting, sleeping, eating, and that is simply not acceptable. We're never going to solve homelessness if we keep arresting people who are homeless for simply existing. So we are continuing our campaign across the state and across the West Coast to talk in every single community and to grow the number of people that we have that are supporting us. I don't know if anybody here has ever had a dog as a pet. Have you? When you train your dog to sit, does he sit the first time you tell him to sit? What do you have to do? You have to tell him to sit and show him how to sit and do it again and again and again, and finally when you say sit, that dog sits. That's what we have to do. That's what we have to do with our politicians. It's not going to work the first time, the second time. We have to tell them and show them and keep going back and never give up. And that's what we're going to do until we get the rights that we need codified into law so that we're protected.
Unfortunately, dogs are smarter than politicians.
Want to bring somebody up who can talk about the state budget and how it affects working people and homeless people. I want to bring up Pete from the California Partnership.
Thank you all. Thank you for being here. This is really exciting, right? Look around. Look at what we've got here. We've got power in the streets today. That's exciting, right? So I work at the California Partnership. We're a statewide coalition of anti-poverty organizations. And we pay close attention to the state budget every year. State budget is a moral document that tells us what people in what the governor of California and what the government of California cares about and what they don't. So folks may have heard that the deficit is over, that there's no more deep budget cuts happening. So we were hoping this year that we would start to chip away at the grinding poverty in California. California has the largest, the highest percentage of poverty of any state in the country. You can boo that. Boo! What that means to me is that we need a deep investment in things like housing, health care, CalWORKS, which is a welfare to work program, programs that lift people out of poverty, give folks dignity in their lives. What the governor said on January 10th is that he wants to invest in debt and prisons. Debt and prisons were all the governor wanted to invest in on January 10th. We can boo that too, right? Boo! So what we've got to do, what the Homeless Bill of Rights says to me, and what the movement of you all doing says to me, is that we can't be silent, we can't be satisfied with this being the new normal, what's happening in our state being the new normal, that we're just going to pretend that the deep budget cuts of the last 10 years didn't happen, that we're just going to accept that 8.7 million Californians are living in poverty. We're just going to accept that nearly a quarter of all children in California are growing up in poverty. We're not going to accept it, are we? We're not going to accept it. What this says, what a Homeless Bill of Rights says, is that we are people too. Poor people are people too. All people in California deserve a place to live, dignity, and respect.
Amen!
So I think we're going to move on to City Hall in a second, but I want to hear from you. What are your values? Homes, not jails.
Homes, not jails. Homes, not jails. Homes, not jails.
And that's what the folks were marching and shouting and filling the streets with, or at least about a quarter of a block. Not quite. I'm trying to remember exactly. I think it was a couple hundred people who were doing this march in San Francisco on a Friday afternoon. In Santa Cruz, this idea of the new normal is something we have to fight as well. At Santa Cruz City Council two afternoons, the mayor not only ignored the overflow oral communications line, did demanding that the great Morgani and other street performers be respected and restored their right to use public space to actually benefit the town, benefit the entire community, and not to mention the street scene for those of us who are outside, for those of us who are supporters of a vibrant street community. But just ordinary folks coming to town appreciate performers like Morgani, the great Morgani, Frank Loma, who was driven out of Santa Cruz by the imposition of street performers' restrictions, the shrinking sidewalk laws, as I called them. Also, at the same city council meeting, an hour or two before, the city council was played along with the bogus task force generating and relying on public hysteria, which calls itself the Public Safety Task Force, which redefines and rebrands public safety as making the homeless invisible and deporting them or terrifying them and driving them away by essentially trying to mobilize the community into the fantasy that homeless people are criminals for engaging in life-sustaining behaviors like sleeping, innocent behaviors in public spaces like sitting next to a building, behaviors that ordinary people can do like drinking or carrying alcohol, not in terms of any bad behavior, but just that very act itself. These are the crimes that overload the stats presented by Deputy Chief Steve Clark and others, although we don't know how much they do because this task force and Steve Clark, the deputy chief in the police department that presented to the homeless study session, the homelessness study session that that essentially gave on its figures to the homeless task force the public safety task force last year, never broke down into categories exactly what crimes they were talking about. They said, look at all these citations. 40% of the citations and 30% of the arrests in Santa Cruz come from people outside or with a 115 Coral Street address or transient. But not mentioned was what they're being arrested for, what they're being cited for. In fact, it is a merry-go-round game where the police department creates these crimes, persuades the city council to pass them in collusion with downtown merchants and reactionary residents whose objective is to establish a different kind of Santa Cruz than currently exists, with no visible poverty, with essentially a bedroom community for those with money, with wealth, from elsewhere mostly, even driving out native Santa Cruzans who happen to be poor at the present time. And they're calling it public safety. And they passed a 100 chronic offenders program, which I shall talk about a little bit more later in the show. That's a program that stigmatizes 100 people who get the most tickets without specifying what those tickets are for. The Bob Lee, the district attorney, who's going to spend another $100,000 on prosecuting the Santa Cruz 11, the final four of the Santa Cruz 11, the individuals who attempted to expose Wells Fargo Bank. I was among the Santa Cruz 11. We were in a vacant Wells Fargo leased bank building, which some wanted to repurpose as a community center. Others wanted to have it as a winter homeless shelter, since their shelter for less than 5% of the homeless people in the city. It's been a vacant building, was then for 3 years, now it's 5 years it's been vacant. Instead of going after the major bankster, Wells Fargo, which continues to rip off millions of dollars, essentially in the property of the people it forecloses on fraudulently, the largest forecloser in the country, hasn't been reined in significantly, and hopefully there's going to be some stats coming out on just how far it's gone here in Santa Cruz, while DA Bob Lee attempts to make scapegoats of and distract attention from this real issue, which is what the protesters were drawing attention to, and which has been largely successful over the last 2 years. You don't hear much protest against Wells Fargo's activities. You don't hear much protest against foreclosures, which continue. Instead, you hear, you know, you have this drumbeat about the public safety of homeless people outside being some menace, this big hysteria about needle mania although the number of needles found pales in comparison with the number that have actually been turned in by services that have been destroyed by this people screaming needle mania. The needle exchange services at Barson Street and now at Emmeline Street. Anyway, this whole thing that is being brought up in San Francisco is completely relevant to us now. We need to deny the new normal, not glide along with it, not invite the people who are championing this fantasy onto our websites to spread their poison and their propaganda, but call them out for what they are. Hysterics, liars, people who are focusing on, basing their statements on essentially a notion of the inequality of human rights. It's a fascist belief that only certain groups of people have full rights as human beings. And that is an evil. And it's not that the people who are doing this are evil in and of themselves. I don't got Annalisa Cube, I'm sure, is a fine woman, a co-founder of Take Back Santa Cruz. Pamela Comstock, council member and co-founder. You know, I don't know much about them as individuals in terms of their own work, but I would imagine, you know, in their own groups, how they care for their own children, their own families, their own friends is, you know, probably no worse than how I treat other people in my own group, in my community. But when we talk politically, when we talk about what the kinds of ideas these people are spreading, championing, then we have to stop and say no. Anyway, let's hear about people saying no to the criminalization of homeless statewide back on January 17th in San Francisco.
That's how it goes. I recognize that tune. David Grace, an old Food Now Bombser, has appeared. He did video for 1994 in Santa Cruz for the sit-down riots, the police rioting and brutalizing people in the peaceful support for Food Now Bombs and the right to sit down and eat food. And a familiar street here. This is where many a time Food Not Bombs serve people at the Civic Center. Civic Center Plaza Park.
What do we want?
Across from the mayor's office.
What do we want it?
No!
What do we want?
Nothing!
What do we want it?
No!
Sweet dreams are made of these. Looks like about 50 people in business suits, and maybe it's a wedding, are on the steps of City Hall with orange cones kind of walling off the steps. It's a public building. I don't know how they can get away with that. People are gathering in front of City Hall anyway, right behind the orange cones. The Sheriff's Department has reinforced the police department. They're standing on the steps. Not quite sure what this other event is. That's breakfast on the saxophone. The protesters are being shooed behind the orange cones on the steps of City Hall, but boy, I thought this was a public building. What am I thinking of here?
You'll see what he says.
Oh, yeah. Well, you never ask permission. You always ask forgiveness later.
That's what they say.
and it's the power of joyful anger, we hope. I've been invited to speak. We'll see if that happens.
Right. You guys hear me?
Yeah.
We're right here, right in front of the seat of power in San Francisco, and they need to hear us. Am I right?
Yeah.
We are so sick in San Francisco of every time there's election of homeless people being a scapegoat. Every goddamn election, we're tired of it. Is that right? They're running from office. They're getting right-wingers elected off of the backs of homeless people. Homeless people's backs are already tired from sleeping on the concrete. This is going to take a lot of work, but we are going to get a homeless bill of rights in California. Am I right? Again and again until we pass this thing.
Yeah.
We are not going to give up. Homeless people have nowhere to go. They should have a right to sleep. That is what every human being needs. They need sleep. Am I right?
Yeah.
Can you stand on your feet 24 hours a day?
No.
So we need a homeless bill of rights, and we're going to do this, and let's give it up for what's going to be speaking next. Our next speaker here, so let me hear
it.
Housing. Viviendo en plena libertad y en un estado de derecho. Hoy es una desgracia estar homeless.
Living in a state of supposed freedom and rights is shameful to be homeless.
Aunque hay refugios, hoteles de bajos recursos, sección 8 y programas para refugiarse, en invierno mucha gente sigue viviendo en las calles.
So in spite of shelters, hotels, section 8 and programs, there are so many people still on the streets.
Bajo los puentes, en los parques, en espacios reducidos, de los edificios públicos, a un lado de las carreteras y donde la gente se siente protegida.
We're sleeping on public buildings, on bridges, on parks, reduced spaces. We're trying to find a place to feel safe and protected.
Mi cuestión es, ¿hasta cuándo, señores?
My question is, how much longer?
Hey,
hola.
Racismo.
It's called racism. That's right.
La sociedad americana ha evolucionado gracias a los dirigentes de los tres poderes, legislativo, ejecutivo y judicial. Y se ha culturalizado gracias a los miles de inmigrantes de todo el mundo.
The American society has evolved and has in some ways got richer thanks to the contribution of thousands of immigrants from all over the world.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most cosmopolitan societies.
Y como tal, tiene problemas multiraciales. Lo que no entiendo es por qué a latino se le rezaga, se le limita, se le pone muchos obstáculos.
What I don't understand is why for Latinos there are so many barriers, so many obstacles, so many barriers.
Thanks. Empleos. Sé que Estados Unidos tiene una economía dinámica y creciente, y también sé que el gobierno tiene la obligación y responsabilidad de generar nuevos empleos.
The United States is alleges a dynamic economy and a government that alleges to have obligations and responsibility to generate employment.
Yo como inmigrante sin preparación técnica puedo realizar trabajos que los americanos no quieren hacer y puedo prepararme para competir por mejores empleos.
As an immigrant, I'm prepared to do the work that no one wants to do, and I can prepare also to compete for better jobs.
Yeah. Y así ayudar económicamente a mi familia. Tengo sueños, deseos y fuerza para trabajar y quiero trabajar. Gracias.
I want to help my family. I want to help community. I have the wish to work and I want to work.
All right. All right. Yeah. Sí.
And, of course, it's interesting. This is also true here in Santa Cruz, where, and particularly in South County in Watsonville, a lot of homeless people or people who are living, for example, in the riverbed are immigrants, Spanish-speaking folks, mostly, I would think. I haven't spent much time down there. I occasionally been down to talk with the Brown Berets and occasionally get calls from folks who are there. So, for instance, a couple days ago, on Tuesday, I got a call from a woman who informed me in Spanish, which we struggled along with. Actually, she had a translator who talked about the Watsonville authorities moving on the homeless camps in the dry riverbed because of, quote, environmental concerns. And Santa Cruz, of course, that's the older excuse that has been used to attack homeless people. Oh, they're poo-pooing all over the Pogonip. They're ruining the whole area. They're creating fires. And it isn't that those aren't true statements in terms of the fact that these things do happen. But instead of dealing with those issues, they're used as a stick, as a smear job, and as a framing jacket to create a scapegoat and to push for the reactionary agenda of driving away homeless people or making them seem less than human. And so encouraging merchants, for example, in downtown coffee shops to deny them service under the excuse of having a backpack with them, to encourage the district attorney to waste tens of thousands of dollars by opening a new office downtown to go after those criminal sitters who are a major public menace on Pacific Avenue, to create misdemeanor crimes out of these infractions, which are normally punishable by fines and community service, but now they become misdemeanors because Bob Lee, our district attorney, is now turning the force of his office and his district attorneys on the poor people outside who there is a determination to drive away from the downtown, from the residential areas, even from the industrial areas, from the park areas, to drive them away. And the excuse, of course, is that this is a smart solution. We're really looking for housing for these people, but if we can't find housing, our big deal is to make sure that they obey the laws we create, which in essence criminalize things they have to do. Go to the bathroom, sleep at night, put up shelter against the rain. When I hear, as I did yesterday, of people getting tickets for sheltering themselves under the awnings on Pacific Avenue, that was a ticket report I got from Pirate Jeff and Boots, who you may have heard talk on this station, from Officer Barnett, who you may have also heard his name mentioned on this station, for essentially sheltering themselves by either sitting or standing next to the Taco Bell area in the vacant building that's right next to Taco Bell near Pacific and Laurel Streets. Then I get pissed. I think this is... I kind of nod my head knowingly saying, here we go again. But, of course, then we have people who are beginning to keep an eye on this, who are beginning to video Barnett's depredations. But it's going to be a hard struggle, folks, because they are arraying against the homeless community well-paid professional attorneys who are interested in criminalizing people under the guise of helping the community and helping the people. And they've enlisted... I'd have to say traitors like Monica Martinez or the Homeless Lack of Services Center director to be a part of this campaign to get the most chronic offenders, the 100 most chronic offenders, you know, offensive sleepers, offensive folks who take alcohol around with them or are caught with alcohol in their campsite or caught smoking marijuana. And, you know, I would even include people who are drug users in this situation. House drug users have a fine time. They don't have to worry about this kind of crap. They're indoors. They can pursue their vices, their habits, their addictions privately. Homeless people have no such power. And, indeed, homeless people are also in a position where they're under far more pressure than people in houses, because of this kind of crap that they have to face every morning, every noon, every afternoon, every night. And it's more than I'd want to face, I'll tell you. Let's hear some more from the homeless people standing up to say no thanks, demanding a homeless bill of rights, such as actually hopefully stronger than was passed in Connecticut, Illinois, and Rhode Island. And I'm still waiting for reports from those states as to whether it's just, a pretty picture to engage in liberal fundraising or to encourage homeless rights groups that actually, maybe fund them, give them something to shout about, but not something to really effectively use. I'd like to know where it's at. And I keep getting answers that are not terribly instructive. And I played some of those dialogues I had with people at this homeless rally in March and the homeless gatherings beforehand. There was a whole room full of homeless organizations in the San Francisco Public Library, which I went around and did some interviewing. You can find it on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, huffsantacruz.org. Catching up with my descriptions there, so you can always listen to back shows pretty soon after they are broadcast, but often in order to find out, to get a capsule description, to be able to read what the back show is about, not to listen to the whole damn thing to find it out, that takes a little longer, but I'm trying to catch up with that. So, anyway, back to January 17th.
¡Se puede! ¡Sí se 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 puede!
Can I give it up for the community of the Mission Neighborhood Resource Center that turned out in mass? Let's give an applause to the Mission!
One of the problems that we see every day is that we live in a country of contradictions, in a country that's rooted in hypocrisy. So every hour of every day, we spend more than $100 million. Every hour of every day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, on weapons of mass destruction.
All right.
So in 1 hour, we spend more on the military than we spend in San Francisco in an entire year on all of our homeless services. Every day in this country, 100 children are born into poverty. 100 children. That situation is unacceptable. It is immoral. We have more people in prison in this country than we have families in public housing.
All right, come on, say that.
And so over time, what has happened is that the Department of Justice, our criminal justice system, has become the largest builder of low-income housing for minorities in general and young black men in particular. That is the country we live in. And so every day, we are struggling with the hypocrisy in our midst, that we live in one of the wealthiest cities in the world, and yet, people have to participate in a lottery system to get in a shelter bed for the night. We have 5 times as many homeless people on the street as we have shelter beds. Nearly 2/3 of the families with children in public housing in this country have been in public housing for more than 20 years. They are trapped in islands of despair, discomfort, discontent, and for many of our children, broken dreams. And so all of us, this is a country that represents all of us. We have to say that enough is enough.
All right.
And as Paul said earlier, nothing will be given to us without a fight. There is no progress without struggle.
Yes.
If they want it bad enough, we have to fight for it. We have to make the case that our home is actually the Constitution of the United States. That is the home for homeless people. Because the 14th Amendment talks about due process. The 6th Amendment of the Constitution talks about a right to counsel. It does not talk about the right to counsel for poor people. It does not talk about due process for poor people. We apply the opposite logic for wealthy people that we do for rich, that we do for poor people. When we give wealthy people money, it's called an incentive. When we give poor people money, it's called a disincentive. We say that the last thing you want to do for a poor person is to give them money.
All right, brother, come on now.
And although it's true in the city and county of San Francisco that we no longer have a manufacturing economy, the one thing that we do make in this city every day
is money. One thing that we do make in this city every day is money.
There is money for everything if we want it bad enough.
Say it again.
You have to decide to yourself how hard you want to fight this struggle.
That's right.
Yes, we lost. Yes, we lost last year, but we're not defeated.
That's right.
We get our hearts broken every day, but they can never break our spirit.
Right.
So I am asking you to look to your left, look to your right, and say we are partners in this struggle. We are in this fight to the end. God bless all of you.
All right.
Hey, Diego!
I was born in 1949 during the Great Crash of Texas, and I know what poverty is. We used to have haircuts for 10 cents back then. Loaf of bread was 5 cents. You could go to a movie for 10 cents. Now, we've got inflation so bad that we can't afford these prices for these high rents. I get a Social Security check now, and I only get $850 a month. The rents are $1,400 up for one bedroom. I mean, I doesn't even pay for the doorknob, you know? And I'm homeless. I'm staying right now in Berkeley at the White Homeless Women's Shelter, okay? And my family, we fought in the American Revolution. I'm a Brigham. The Brigham's from Massachusetts, where I was born. And we fought in the American Revolution. I had two brothers in the World War II. One was a pilot, one was a Marine. And I love this country. And when I graduated from high school, we sang America the Beautiful. But America has become ugly. It's become divided. And the Bible says a house divided against itself will fall. And the rich have taken over. They look down on us. It's a stinking word to be on Section 8. They look down on us. And there's a lot of talent in here. We have artists. We have lawyers. We have people that are broken. And we're not nothing. We're something. And we're important. And I want to say something to the homeless. I used to work for the police department in Livermore, California. And
she used to work for the police department.
Yes.
In Livermore.
Yes. In Livermore.
And we've got to give house keys, not handcuffs.
House keys, not handcuffs.
She said we
got to
give house keys, not handcuffs.
The police do a good job protecting us, but they're protecting laws that are absurd and ridiculous and making it hard for us. There's so much red tape. They hang us with red tape. They used to hang us from limbs in the, before Abraham Lincoln showed up. You know, we used to have race problems. But now it's rich against the poor. And we've got to speak up.
Here we go.
We've got to stand together.
All right.
Oh-ho. We have power. Power.
All right.
We can't do it alone. We've got to... I'm going to dress up like Santa Claus and go out in the street corner. Because
you said you want to dress up like Santa Claus and go out on the street corner.
Yeah.
Remember that movie, Meet John Doe? I saw it last week in Berkeley. It's an old movie, 70 years old, with Gary Cooper and Bobby Stanley. And they had Meet John Doe comes all over the country. And that's what we need.
All right.
All
thank
right.
You.
Thank you.
Trust me. I'll just talk to Montana. She's in the back. Hello, everybody. I'm standing on the city hall steps. We own this city hall. This is our city hall.
Yeah.
This is ours. And I have this funny feeling this gentleman is going to move me off the steps that belong to us. I want to invite you to the United States of Money.
And what was interesting is as this woman was speaking in front of the San Francisco City Hall, a line of deputies and cones, sort of those traffic cones, were blocking the homeless protesters from going onto the steps, although ordinary citizens in business suits or some of them not in business suits, were walking up and down, being ignored by the deputies. It was very selective. It would have been interesting if I mean, some of us actually moved past that, but not many. There was this fear, as there is here in Santa Cruz all over, of these guys with guns and badges. And this, sometimes it masquerades as respect for the law. However, laws that treat one group of people one way and another group of people the other way, in which it's quite clear that those with the uniforms and the badges are enforcing class law, needs to be dealt with, obviously on a situational basis, but it has to be understood that it has nothing to do with justice. And how those who are either ignoring the law or breaking the law or essentially acting in accord with justice rather than with respect for the law are actually showing respect for something deeper, or they may be. Obviously, it depends on every individual case. So here's some more again from that January 17th day, the end of this outspoken rally. A lot of I think, pertinent things were said. Stuff I think I'd heard before, but I tend to think it's useful to say it and to hear it again.
This is the United States of Money, California, Substation. We can teach people in this country something new. Homeless and poor people, I am one of you. You are me. We can teach this country something new. Your value as a human being rests in here. This is your power. You're all beautiful inside. Inside. This is your strength. This is where it comes from. Your value does not rest on how much money you make. Let's show them that. We will change this from the United States of money to the United States of human rights and real democracy. To make the world the way it was when this lady who spoke before me was young. And when I was young, we experienced that. We know what it was like. Thank you.
Thank you, girl. All right. So I want to thank everybody for coming out. And the Brass Liberation Orchestra is going to lead us out with... Bella Chow, is it? Yes. Remember, Bowden said you got to dance to the revolution.
My check.
Good check.
My check.
Good check.
All right. You don't have to repeat after me, but I wanted to say some stuff. No, I'm good. Yeah, I'm with Homeless Ideas. I wanted to say that if there's abandoned buildings and people are taking them over, we gotta show solidarity with that. We gotta show solidarity with people who are trying to claim these houses to rebuild them to support people and activists. Squatting is a great way to support social centers, great ways to support like a base for people to build on, and that's very important to think about because not only does it support us, it supports the people after us and around us. So that's something to really think about. On squatting is a very important thing, but there's also something that needs to happen. Is the community needs to be more okay with that. They need to understand that over by like Rainbow Grocery, there's that building right there, that tall apartment building. That guy owns four of them, and it's just sitting there. And these things are like they need to change. People need to go in there like mobilizing groups and take it over and be like, yo, like, you know, let's Food Not Bombs is going to be here, and but there needs to be more solidarity behind that, and that's all I got to say.
Yeah, yeah,
all
right.
Please. My name is Steven. I'm from Santa Barbara, California, and what I must say to you is that I'm here in San Francisco. I'm with Hot Team. I've been treated like shit. I've only had a bed for 2 months, and I've been told that I make too much money. So what, I make $12.50 a month, but I don't qualify for assistance. I don't even qualify for a bed. How fucked is that?
You're here.
All right.
So it's around 4, and it's interesting. Deputies are not stopping average people from entering City Hall. They are holding back the crowd from the steps, the protest people. And worse, we are acknowledging it. Looks like a wedding is happening. Where's my hug?
And that was January 17th, the Homeless Bill of Rights protests, and we still, of course, have no Homeless Bill of Rights. Let's see if the mic works. Say something there.
Hello.
And that's our in-studio co-host or interloper or...
I don't want to pay dues anymore, so I just jump on Robert's show.
This is Free, who has actually done some very good shows. Your stuff is still archived on...
Yeah, radioforall.net.
Radio for
Free the Land, or you can get the archives in our through the website, freakradio.org. Free the Land.
Free the Land on freakradio.org. What are some of the topics you've covered in the past that you think are really worth people checking over again?
Well, I do homeless rights. Then I do political in general conspiracy type things, and then wacky science.
Wacky science,
wacky science,
rights, and conspiracies. What could be more exciting?
There you go. There goes my credibility right there.
But, that depends on who you're talking to. But, Free, I know you, I heard some, my mind was partially on trying to monitor what goes on here in the studio, which I'm always trying to do as I'm on the air. But you mentioned something about...
the final solution to the homeless problem.
Well, what is that final solution?
Well, someone told me, this is third hand, that another person had been staying at one of the local shelters here, and they had sprayed pesticide and wouldn't let anyone open the windows. People were throwing up. Some people got rashes. And then they made them sleep there all night.
Huh. Now, what about... ignoring that whole issue, because who cares if homeless people are, get pesticides?
That is the final solution, right? You get them all into camps or shelters, and they're easy to kill, right?
Well, I don't think that probably was the purpose. Probably the purpose is to ignore them and to let them suffer, whatever, because thing is to keep the place clean of pests, except, of course, for the homeless pests, which...
they're required by law to have somewhere to put them.
They're not really... If they're required by law, nobody's enforcing that law, as far as I know.
Since there is a place, you don't have a necessity defense to sleeping outside.
Well, I mean, there's no place for 10% of the for 90% of the homeless population.
Right.
So, I've heard people say, well, there's a requirement that the county build all this and build all that, and people say, hey, look at that. But in fact, such a requirement, if it's there, and there's something about, I think, allowing for zoning for that to happen.
Right.
Ed Fry has talked about that, attorney and activist Ed Fry.
Yeah, they have to do a survey to see if there's a need for it. But beyond that, they don't actually have to do it. But they can't stop somebody else from doing it.
Right, but the point is nobody is volunteering to do
it. No, I don't mean there's a legal requirement for them, but if there is nowhere legal for you to sleep, then you have a necessity defense in court to say that there was no legal place for me to sleep. In which case, in all the cases we've been to, my brothers especially, they trot out somebody who says, I had a bed at my discretion that was available.
Your brother,
but it wasn't really
available.
You're
talking about Gary Johnson.
Yes, the only one who actually did serve a sentence for Peace Camp 2010. And is still under a 2-year suspended sentence. He's in exile out of the country because he needs to sleep, and if he slept here, he would do that whole 2 years.
Peace Camp 2010, of course, was the protest in front of the county courthouse that lasted for 3 months, supplied the only porta potty that was open 24 hours in town, I guess, with the exception of one out of the homeless.
There is another one now thanks to Huff, actually.
Now there is the
Micah Posner, who proposed
the Posner poo-poo machine.
That's
that is
right.
Now available at the corner of Laurel and Front Street.
That's right. He says it was a Huff. So when they say you never do anything, Robert, that's not entirely true.
I tend to ignore those kinds of statements because I don't think they're true. And I'd be happy to, there actually are all kinds of things Huff has done over the years. Mostly we kind of have fought back and educated against this kind of wave of toxic mythology, which criminalizes homeless people, treats them as vermin.
Well, you're also doing something currently. I mean, you're doing kind of a food not bombs thing. You're giving away free coffee in front of the coffee roasting as part of a protest against discrimination against the homeless people there.
No, we did that once.
But I heard
and it may happen again. I mean, it depends on whether people want to do it again. And it was, of course, as part of a protest in order to encourage not just the roasting company, but all the other coffee shops to let people with backpacks into their coffee shops. Lulu Carpenter's, Pete's, Starbucks, and the coffee roasting company apparently have explicit no backpack policies, which are then, of course,
selectively enforced, like the ordinances downtown.
And I can speak from personal experience of that. I walked in there 3 days. I walked in there, I guess it was on Tuesday or Monday, to meet someone, and... I bought a cup of coffee, even at the coffee roasting company, because I want to give these restaurants, these cafes, a chance to change their policies. I'm not interested in destroying their businesses and so forth. I'm not interested in that. I've been a part of boycotts in the past against cafes and restaurants and businesses that have taken an active role in pushing legislation to that criminalize people and drive people like the great Morgani out of town, the downtown ordinances, that were really designed to go after homeless people. The more reason they go after Morgani is because eventually street performers get caught up in it, partially, and partially because there's this sort of very rigid hagiography for sort of a belief in the sacredness of these ordinances, that if, and that everyone should follow them, and that somehow there's this fantasy that they're useful, right, effective.
Well, they're probably not constitutional. I was just looking up the unreasonably disturbing sound ordinance that you were arrested for in 2010, or cited for, and it's not on the books anymore.
It is.
On the website.
It is. It's just been changed. They've removed, actually, a part of it, which is the better part, which says that if this activity is constitutionally protected, the ordinance shall not apply. That section was removed after a lawsuit by a preacher.
Right. They were successful. I think they got 40 grand for their
lawyer. Preacher was accused of actually engaging in unreasonably disturbing noise.
But I didn't
noise.
See any of that. I mean, I saw the same number, and it just says that this shall just apply. You know, it hasn't anything about that.
I think it's there. I mean, I'll
I mean, it's
check.
On the web. Who knows if that's up to date? But I don't see it there
it's,
anymore.
I mean, it's part of the municipal code, if you look at the code,
it's
as far as I know. But again, you know, I could be wrong. I could check again on that. So I think the point of these laws, as I was saying before, is I think that it's not just... They're going after homeless people because that's what they originally were, panhandlers. They called it behavior ordinances originally.
Mm-hmm.
But there was not really about, it was about, not about behavior, or would talk about abusive panhandling. It talked about essentially eliminating the possibility of any kind of panhandling, abusive or otherwise, on 95% of the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
And eliminating the possibility of any kind of sitting on 95% of the sidewalk.
But the reason is they can't eliminate it 100% because that would be in trouble, because this is constitutionally protected.
Right, so they have the protest pens and little zones
where
people can be.
Yeah, so they squeeze it down where it's inadequate.
But what's happening is that, you know, they... There was a big controversy about 12 years ago when they made this worse and extended these zones, as they've since extended them even further.
Oh, even further.
In order to protect. They're saying, oh, we're not going after our street performers. Our street performers are fine. We love our street performers. And actually, there are very few complaints against street performers. There was one problematic complaint essentially dealing with a very reactionary business management, the Heinrichs of the Pacific Trading Company. I don't know if they still own the company or if it's moved or changed hands. But they didn't like a guy called Cosmic Chris, who's now dead, who was a performer on Pacific Avenue, who performed in front of their place.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to deal with their private concern about this one performer, they and Candy Jackson of Jackson's Shoes pushed this whole series of downtown ordinances, including the move-along law, the 14-foot setbacks, and they rammed it through council
in a very
short period of time.
That shows you how strong the merchants are. I mean, the rest of the community in Santa Cruz is pretty much has no power at all. It's the merchants that
it
run this town.
It wasn't about the street performers, though, gentlemen. They kept assuring people it wasn't. In fact, they delayed
What's happened downtown.
They delayed these ordinances for about half a year in order to accommodate the street performers. And then, when the new council came in, they ignored completely everything the downtown commission said, which said you should respect the street performers, let them do their...
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think there was... I don't know that they actually called for the return to the 22-year-long successful voluntary street performers guidelines, which people may have heard discussed by Tom Noddy on this show, which is essentially you don't need laws to
just
regulate
general,
street performers.
General understanding.
A rotational
them.
System where there's a peer pressure has or was more effective, according to Noddy, and I don't... I would, you know, I don't like to take authority on any particular subject, but I don't recall there were a lot of street performer problems during the 22 years between 1980 and 2002 when the voluntary street performers guidelines were there. I have the feeling these laws are something that city council members do in order to please a certain...
people that pay for their campaigns.
That could be, or certainly a constituency that has mostly have to do with merchants and downtown residents, some downtown residents. Not the poorer downtown residents necessarily, and not, but you know, it's. And then the laws become, in order to justify what they do, they claim that all these laws have to be, uniformly enforced. And if they are, it drives
They're
away people like Morgani, and that, of course, really doesn't bother, I think, the people at the city council level. I think they will say, oh, well, Morgani can, if he wants to, he can move out to the curb with everybody else and, you know, squeeze himself into 3 squares, 12 square feet. He can, you know, make sure he moves every hour on the hour and that he's 12 feet away from everything else.
Mm-hmm.
He takes one of the few spots, and there's less than a... I don't know, a dozen or two dozen spots in the downtown area, which you can only use once per day for a one-hour time period. So it really is an attempt to make it unwelcome to these performers, yeah, with the real objective of getting rid of the entire street culture downtown, yeah, other than commercialized culture.
Well, and they especially don't like the artists because they're a direct competition for a lot of the businesses. I mean, I'm talking about the people selling jewelry and, you know, fine art and stuff,
you know,
like that.
I don't even know that. I mean, how much... You talk to people who are selling this arts downtown, they don't make...
I know they make
a hell
any money.
Of a lot of money, you know. I mean, and I haven't compared it. I haven't gone into the business. Say, how much did you make today? How much did you make today? But I would really wonder if they are really any kind of competition, you know. And it sounds like this is some bureaucrat's dream, based upon bureaucrat's plan imposed by somebody like Scott Collins, assistant to the city manager, who is.
Well, you know, Robert, I'm all for firing bureaucrats on a regular basis.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, I'm talking about this. The city staff is a very conservative group.
Oh, yes.
And that is something that, you know, we just cannot, I cannot get.
Power corrupts, and they have more power than city
council. People like Micah Posner, the council member, to understand, he's constantly praising these people.
Well, he needs them to get his stuff through.
And he can't get his stuff through anyway. I mean, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
They don't want his stuff to go
through.
That's
right.
And so he's barking up the wrong tree. He needs the community. And he's always saying, well, bring people to city council. Come to the city council.
Well, that's what the people always say, the community. But the community is not getting the policing they want out there because the police are all downtown enforcing these, you can't sit here, you can't sit there,
there's no point in telling...
The community doesn't care about it. It's the merchants that
care about it. There's no point in bringing and calling, telling people, as Posner does, to come to the city council. You yourself, as a council member, are not taking the steps and doing everything you can to get all the information out, to raise issues with motions at the council, to be a person who leads in this situation. And I think that's
Well, we'll
very
see
hard.
Next election. I'm hearing there's going to be a slate with a lot more... progressive candidates.
I'm not waiting for the next
fascist
election particularly, but I hope you're right. You know, it's always nice if that happens. And I don't.
Well,
think,
I hope you'll be out there continuing to protest, because this was a very powerful protest. You were followed by security all the way to City Hall and the march afterwards. Blake has been getting hassled on the streets regularly about this. This is very
scary.
You're
referring to the coffee roasting company one-time protest Wednesday before last.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were planning to do it on Wednesday yesterday,
but it got rained out.
But there was a lot of rain, and you know, it's and frankly, you know, it. Santa Cruz is unusually kind of their seasonal in their protests. I mean, you can't tell when people are going to actually do it or not do it. And I'm certainly happy to be supportive.
Well, Food Not Bombs gets a large amount of people every week.
And indeed, Food Not Bombs this morning, although it didn't get a large number of people, did do a feeding in front of the courthouse.
Oh,
they were there at, I guess, at 9 o'clock for the Santa Cruz 11, who showed up.
Oh, what happened on that, Robert?
The Final Four in the Santa Cruz 11.
Were you there?
No. Cameron, Laura, I got a report though. Cameron Laurendeau, Gabriela Ripley Phipps, Frank Alcantara, Angel Frank Alcantara, Frank Angel Alcantara, and then finally Brent Adams. Are four individuals charged with misdemeanor trespass, i.e., being in the Wells Fargo leased building, and then because they were in the building, blamed for vandalism done by other people in the days that followed because of a contorted aiding and abetting theory.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some evidence seems to be gathered indicating that Wells Fargo made significant contributions to Bob Lee's political campaign. And this was before...
It's all about the money,
the
as you
Cruz
say,
11.
Robert. Hypocrisy.
And, you know, but I mean, I haven't seen the evidence clearly yet in terms of... It needs to be, you know, gathered. And in fact, Keith McHenry, who is the man who actually gave me a report, and I'm going to give a report on what he said happened at that hearing today, he pointed out that what he'd like to do next week is research actually how much this is all costing the city in terms of bailiffs, court costs, attorneys,
or county,
and also he wants to investigate Wells Fargo. How much has Wells Fargo foreclosed on the county for the last couple of years?
Yeah.
And of course these people are not under the spotlight of Bob Lee, our district attorney. It is those who are protesting.
Mm-hmm.
For Wells
they don't
Fargo.
Like protest, which is all the more reason to do protest.
Yeah, for sure. So, and for those, you know...
Who's the judge, by the way, do you know?
Judge Burdick. Paul Burdick will be continuing. He's still on the case, according to what I was told by
Keith
McHenry.
Well, that's good. I mean, because otherwise they would be completely screwed, because
he's
the fairest judge out there.
Which isn't saying much.
Exactly.
No, it isn't, I'm afraid.
I feel the same way. I
do not want to be unfair or mean to Judge Burdick. But, you know, he's the judge who, when presented with the fact that on multiple occasions, District Attorney Rebecca Young concealed, withheld discovery for the original Santa Cruz 11 defendants repeatedly in the face of court orders to give over the videotapes and the other records. She didn't do it, and she kept cooking up excuses. And Burdick refused to do more. Finally, he did sanction her with a $500 at her office, Bob Lee's office.
Which he spent a few thousand trying to defend.
With a $500, sanction. Which he did spend money to defend, sanction. But, you know, there was no, the reason he kept it low is because if it's over $1,000, the complaint goes to the Bar Association. He didn't want poor Rebecca Young,
who was no longer an attorney anyway,
or Bob Lee's office accused of, you know, of taking
well,
the bar.
Well, it's a good old boy
and,
network.
And it certainly is, because even the defense attorneys, whom I asked individually to file complaints against Rebecca Young, refused to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And they also refused to follow up on this case of filing a brief, because as you pointed out, Bob Lee then, in response to this sanctions, this $500 fine levied on Bob Lee's office for denying the defense the documents they needed again and again and again, and they're doing it again. They did it again today, apparently. I mean, this is becoming, you know,
well, they're still
an old habit.
There's still discovery?
You know, yeah. He said, you know, he put these people in a position where, you got to stop interrupting me, Free. You really, no, you do. You do.
You forgot.
It's not good. But in any case, this case of is unique. In my experience here, I'm not at that experience. I don't follow every case, but I haven't heard of a judge sanctioning the district attorney's office here in Santa Cruz ever before this incident. And in sanctioning it, immediately Bob Lee appealed this, and Bob Lee has continued to appeal this for the last 9 months, and it's still in the courts. This $500, and if you pointed out, it's probably costing thousands of dollars to appeal it, because it's a huge, lengthy process.
What is it, 20-page?
A 47-page document, I think it was.
And he's complaining about not having enough resources prosecute real cases.
None of the defense attorneys who are now going in to defend the four attorneys left, but there were originally 11, are filing friends of the court brief to defend the sanctions against Rebecca Young. What we have, of course, is the same problem we've always had, is that the attorneys are limited in what they're willing to do. They aren't political. Right. Their first allegiance is to their profession and to their
pocketbook.
You know, to some extent, to their pocketbook.
And their client.
And, you know, and also their careers. You know,
right.
That's really what it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I learned today, I got the word again from co-founder Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, who's in town a lot these days.
I got a report on him. I ran into him yesterday.
Yeah, he was at the city council meeting on Tuesday night as well, you know, where the great Morgani received a lot of support from almost every single speaker, and as zero support from the city council, other than I think Micah Posner tried in his feeble way to introduce a resolution asking that the latest version of the sidewalk shrinkage laws be reconsidered and reversed. He couldn't even get, he wasn't able to, first of all, make a motion that said, we have a line of people trying to speak, extend oral communication to take in the last 8 or 9 speakers who want to speak. And there was a big monument for Butchie Baker and Elizabeth Butler outside, and then all the brass of the police were lined up on their chairs, and it was a solemn occasion at 6. But they could have done what the Board of Supervisors does every time when there is overflow in public comment. Put it at the end of the meeting, which is what, they put it at 4:00 in the afternoon. You originally come in to speak at the board every Tuesday at 9, but if it goes beyond 10:00, they'll say, we'll let you speak, but you have to come back. They didn't even do that. Posner made no motion for that. And instead, he asked everybody, wait around, because I want you to wait and see that I'm going to try to put this whole issue on the agenda of a future city council meeting. Come back at 6. At 6, they came back. Oh, come back at 7, he said. And so I guess some people came back at 7. And all he got, according to Tom Noddy, whom I spoke with, was a resolution that said, at some meeting in the future, something will be put on the agenda about this issue. Not a specific resolution asking for rescission of these ordinances. Mm-hmm. Not in 2 weeks immediately. So for the foreseeable future, we're going to see Officer Barnett and all these other armed thugs with uniforms and guns.
It should be going after real crimes where people are really being hurt out in the community. Instead, they're downtown. squeezing
the
sidewalk.
We're going to see them harassing and continuing to do their stuff against people. Although, I have to say, there are some cop watchers who are popping up.
Mm-hmm.
The Colbys are involved in this for one thing. You mentioned Blake. He, in spite of himself getting ticketed, people are keeping an eye on and videoing what police are doing.
That's excellent.
And they're also contacting people who are distantly then calling in to the sergeant on duty and saying, your man Barnett is harassing Kate the scarf seller. Your man is harassing Blake, who walks around with a political sign and gives out political literature. If you're going to keep this up, we're going to put you on a Department of Justice complaint. I've been skeptical about the value of these extensive calls for the Department of Justice investigation, thinking that it's like asking the FBI to investigate. You know, good luck. I don't see it happening. But apparently, persistence can have its impact, and I wouldn't be surprised if at some point that did happen. But merely the threat of it, I think, produces some kind of benefit.
Exactly right.
We have a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Free and Robert.
Oh, hi. My name's David. I'd like to withhold my last name.
Fine.
Go ahead, David.
Well, I was just listening to your program, which I'm glad I can get. I'm really glad that Free Radio is on the air at the present time. It was off for a while. So it's too bad about those street performers. I know that that's one thing I really like about Santa Cruz is the variety. I was not here, unfortunately, during those years before the Pacific Garden Mall was destroyed in 1989.
Right.
So I guess that it was sort of more varied with old stone buildings and historic things, which sounds really nice as a tourist mecca. I think that that would be what I would strive for if I was in a position of authority, was a diverse, flowering, multicultural, aesthetic place that people could, you know, just really enjoy. So I just thought I'd throw that in there and keep up the good work.
Hey, thank you, David, and I agree with you, you know. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, man. Yeah, there were, for those who don't remember, and it's really hard to find photographs of that era, too. It's interesting. If you look at Bruce Bratton's photos, he usually puts a photo every week in the, I guess it's the Good Times, maybe it's the Weekly. He has a picture of historic Santa Cruz from a different period. He almost never has any photos between 1970 and 1989, which is when the mall was... The Pacific Garden Mall, in fact, the Pacific Garden Mall. It was a winding road. It had these beautiful waist-high brick planters up and down the mall. People would come out of the shops. They'd sit on the planters during, have their lunch. The whole community would be there, in essence. And there was all kinds of trees and vegetation all over the place. And it was quite a different place than it is today. And in order to... The police department attempted to change it in the fall of 1989 in September, and Marty Wormhout and John Laird on the city council put forward a proposal to do a one-block pilot change of this. What they wanted to do is they wanted to straighten it out, remove the shrubbage, remove the planters, and make it I don't know what they called it, but it would essentially kind of make it similar to what it is today. And I was petitioning against this. I put out a petition at what was a place called the Cup of Joy. It's now near where Lulu Carpenter's is. At that point, as I was coming out of Lulu Carpenter's on October 17th, 1989, the earthquake hit. It destroyed the mall, of course, and many businesses downtown, and gave the police and conservative forces a perfect opportunity to completely revamp the entire downtown into a kind of a merchant image of essentially... it's not quite 1950s. They had broad sidewalks. They claimed they were going to have benches up and down the mall and plenty of places to be. But in fact, the benches have
been taken out
many
systematically.
At least half of the benches are gone. They don't leave with a public hearing. They leave just on the complaint of a merchant.
Mm-hmm.
And now the benches are used as no-go zones. So if you are within 14 feet of a bench, you can't perform, you can't sit, you can't peacefully hold up a sign if you're sitting down on the ground, or put up a political table, or vend. None of that. And so all this, including the red meters that are used to encourage people to be stingy and to not to give to poor people directly who are seeking funds for one reason or another, the no panhandling meters.
The penguins?
Crosswalks. There are no penguins anymore, but there were a whole series of penguin statues on the, you know, for a while there. These are also 14-foot zones, forbidden zones. And it's a forbidden zone to be 14 feet from a building.
Mm-hmm.
And if you actually look at the ordinance, it is illegal to have a sign that can be read in any of those zones that asks for money at any time of the day or night. And that's never been enforced. But that is a law that is on the books in Santa Cruz.
But a political sign, you can pretty much go almost anywhere.
Provided you're not soliciting. No, actually, yeah, if you're right. If you've got a political sign, in theory, you can
do
that.
You're not sitting down.
Or you bring your own chair. If you bring your own chair, you can sit anywhere you want on the mall, provided
really?
You're not...
Anywhere?
Correct. Unless you're blocking something.
Right, right.
I mean, you can in theory, you could bring a chair and sit in front of the... and play music in front of the sidewalk cafes. You simply could not have a display device there, and you couldn't sit on the sidewalk there.
Right.
But of course, you would still be harassed by police.
Now, display device. What if you had something hung around your neck that people could drop?
Now that's I believe the wording of the ordinance is on the sidewalk.
So if you were carrying it on your person,
correct. I think that's actually been done. In fact, that was suggested to Morgani.
He was saying that he's not going to do that.
Right.
I didn't realize, but everybody else could do that.
Right. They could, and one of the things that people have been doing to try to avoid being caught up in this net is, and they did this 10, 15 years ago when the ordinances got worse, is street performers were allowed a 10-foot. Their forbidden zones were only a 10-foot.
Now
they're 14 feet. So people and it's still true, for example, that if you have to be 50 feet away from an ATM
mm-hmm.
or a change-making machine or a bank in order to sit down or have a panhandling sign of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't have a dog with you if you're doing that. And you can't have more than one person with you. In fact, you can't have one person with you. Whereas
the dog and the person with you, that makes no constitutional sense.
And
it probably can be thrown out.
And if you are, on the other hand, performing... Though you can be within 14 feet of a change machine, you can be with a dog, you can be with another person. So people like Pirate Jeff and Boots, who I've talked about on the air a moment ago, or half an hour ago, or an hour ago now, were doing just that. And what's happening? CSO Barnett has gone after them and is intimidating them, demanding they move, threatening to ticket them, giving them tickets, by claiming that busking is the same thing as panhandling. And what I found in the past is that this kind of police harassment, where he's actually misinterpreting and expanding
mm-hmm.
the draconian powers of these laws, then becomes the basis for a new template, which goes to city council
mm-hmm.
and then becomes itself a new law.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't always happen, but it's happened on at least two occasions. And so it's interesting to me. You're tuned to Free Radio. It's 101.3 FM or freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and the studio with me is Free, who is maybe getting back his show. I don't know.
No,
he can't afford it, I suppose.
We're on time. It's just
and the time
it's up your problem.
Day.
Listens.
Call-in number here is 427-3772. And I think what I'm going to do is take a brief musical break and be right back so I can... do still more of my stuff. See if I can find something suitable that actually will titillate all of us.
All I could say about the Keith McHenry thing, ran into him at Staff Alive, and his health is a lot better. He's like, he was suffering fibromyalgia pain for 20 years. That's gone. He's lost 38 pounds, all from going on a water fast. So I suggested to him that he should expand Food Not Bombs and have another booth there that's Water Not Food.
There you go. Indeed. Another one of your radical suggestions,
Free. That's radical,
baby. Actually, before I leave the subject, I think what I want to do is give the final report on the Santa Cruz 11 so I don't mistakenly, get run out of time. There was a hearing today in the court of Judge Burdick for the four final defendants who were slated to go on trial next week on the 4th of March. They will be charged with misdemeanor trespass and then a felony vandalism, not because any of them were obscene or there's any documentation that any of them committed any kind of vandalism, but simply because they were in the building, and that fact alone indicates that they aided and abetted. Of course, it's preposterous. It defies common sense. But it is a useful tool, as the police like to say when they go to the city council, for catching up the people that the authorities wish to criminalize. So what happened there, apparently, according to Keith McHenry, there are a number of kind of amusing arguments were made, or funny-sounding arguments, maybe not so funny if you're one of the four defendants. The DA wanted, and the judge wanted, wanted the DA to settle this case by requiring the defendants to pay $25,000 or so to the Wells Fargo Bank for the, quote, damages done. It should be said, the damages done amounted to a repainting job, replacement of some furniture, and there was something else, but it was extremely limited in terms of the actual damage, I mean, it sounds like $25,000 is it sounds like too much to me. So,
of course,
you know, it's also these four defendants are poor people. They are not wealthy people. They don't have money. Two of them were homeless, Brent and Frank, or Angel. Two others are, you know.
And they're worried about the restitution, too, from what I've heard, some of them. But from my view, I mean, if you haven't got the money, they can't collect it.
Well, so they were demanding this be done. And Burdick apparently suggested that it could be. Actually, there was an alternate suggestion was made by the some of the defendants or some of the defendants' associates or their attorneys that said, well, there were 150, 200 in the building. If you split it evenly, we'll each pay $100, or we'll each pay $50, or we'll each pay $500. We'll do it that way if that's what you want. That was rejected by either the DA or the judge. Again, it was, again, suggested a benefit concert to get the money. Maybe we could have Judge Burdick doing the twist. Twisted law, twisted rulings, and doing the twist. Then there was a... It was apparently revealed that the DA who was there, I know it was Greg Pineda. I don't know if he was actually there today, but apparently the DA was there, said he was not empowered to negotiate. Well, Burdick ordered the DA who could negotiate to come back tomorrow at 1:30. So if you want to watch this charade, you can go back at 1:30 and observe it and see what's going on. It's going to be in Department 6, and that's Friday, the 28th, I guess, tomorrow.
1:30.
At 1:30.
So this isn't trial readiness. There's some actually things going on.
No, right now the trial has been tentatively postponed until March, I believe it's March 10th. So it's Monday the 10th. At least that's what I heard from Keith
McHenry. And that'll probably be a couple of days of jury selection.
At least.
Yeah, because
But one of the major, another major issue, and one that was, you know, very prominent in my case, because I came back to court again and again and again and again. And until charges were dismissed against me because they had no evidence. And what I was doing is I was reporting on events, and I wasn't doing any vandalism. And I wasn't... They had no evidence. I was in the building after
the warning.
The trespass warning was given, as though that's some sort of sacred thing. But that's the standard...
It's not trespass
till
you're warned.
That's the standard that Burdick used. They didn't give us... all the video. They didn't give us all the tapes. They didn't give us all the documents.
They're still not.
We kept asking again and again and again. And as I said before, and when we talked about this, you know, earlier, the district attorney in that case, who was Rebecca Young, one had the sense that she was simply incompetent and really overwhelmed.
That's my sense.
You know, which was true.
I saw it.
But you know, this is a huge case. There were 11. She was facing 11 attorneys.
Why didn't Bob Lee put more people on?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of weird what he did, and one got the feeling it was sort of. I got the feeling it was sort of a symbolic gesture, or you know, they expected the defense to fold, or it's not clear what they wanted to do, or they just didn't give a shit. But she kept refusing, or declining, or failing to provide these discovery documents. You know, all the videos of what happened. Well, now apparently the prosecution has 60 witnesses lined up, some of whom they've not even told the defense about.
They have interrogatories,
and they have depositions that they've gotten that they haven't shown to the defense. And the defense said, we need a month to look at all this stuff.
Highly irregular.
Burdick refused. He instead said, no, you're going to go to trial on March 10th. But he did insist that every single document be in by the end of the day. Of course, he's done this before.
And they don't produce it.
They don't produce it, and he just slaps them on the wrist or says, oh, well, you better produce them next time. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason to believe that a out-of-control district attorney's office, and I can say that I can tell you that Bob Lee's mouth is definitely out of control. I was had to listen to him at the city council on Tuesday when he went on and on and on about how he's assigning 22 attorneys to staff downtown to make sure that people who are committing infractions, like sitting on the sidewalk, are prosecuted to the full extent of the law.
What? That's a city attorney's job.
No, not anymore. The district attorney is forming a joint task force or task force on this issue.
And this is he was begging for murder attorneys that he didn't have enough. And here he is wasting, again, government resources on this fucking nonsense
downtown.
We're going
to resolve these problems. That's his,
all the more reason to protest downtown in the center of downtown on a regular basis for activists.
But people should also be
not
aware.
Not the clock tower.
People should be aware that with this comes the fact that many people who are setting their tickets aside because they're sleeping band tickets or because they just can't avoid it or because they, you know, they're outraged at the tickets or because they think somehow they're passing through and they can just get out of town, may find themselves in a much more difficult situation. I have to be honest and say this. I think, in a way, it also, of course, sets the scene up for activists in a way that you might criticize, for you suggested that people who criticized me falsely, I believe, in the past, for suggesting that other people go get arrested. I never suggest that. I suggest that people have to be willing, under some circumstances, when they decide it's appropriate, to risk arrest in order to press points.
Well, the problem is if there's a bunch of, if you're doing it by yourself, fine. But if there's a bunch of other people there, they all get pulled in, as we see at the bank, you know.
Well, what I'm saying is that historically with civil disobedience, this is something that, you know, people have to be ready to do. And, you know,
well, it's also a reason why people don't attend protests, because they don't want to get pulled in as part of a conspiracy.
I think there's a little bit of paranoia in your apprehension.
Well, I mean, I've heard this from people.
Yeah, well, you know, and you've also trumpeted it all around town at every meeting we go to where these things come up. I mean, it's a concern of yours, and it's not an illegitimate.
We don't need to get arrested.
I'm not going to argue that. But what I will say is that there are some who believe that you do need to be willing to risk arrest. And others think, you know, it's tactical. It's not necessarily strategic. You know, it's not a matter of principle.
But don't stab the other protesters in the back. You know, do it set at some other time and some other place.
Well, I don't. You know, again, I think that you're kind of passing on some mythology. I don't believe that we've ever stabbed anybody in the back. We've always been clear about what we're doing. Huff activists have said, you know, there's always a danger. There's going to be some arrests, so you should be aware of that if you come. You know, and police do not want to arrest people in these circumstances because it's paperwork, it's a problem.
Mm. They prefer to send a citation in the mail.
Well, that hasn't happened much either. That's only happened I've only heard it happening in 2010 with three activists, Wes Modes, Whitney Wild, and Curtis Relaford, and they marched downtown on DIY. I've never heard it happen any other time.
Micah Posner got one, too.
And you're right. Micah Posner got a citation in the mail for his biking on King Street, I believe it was, but I don't recall any other time that's happened. I'm sure it has. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's their norm. It is a threat. It is a real threat. You know, it can happen, and so it's not something that you shouldn't be aware of. And I think that, you know, I know you often argue, Free, that mobile protests are a good idea, you know, because that way, you know, you avoid the grip of the move-along law.
Well, if you turn the move-along into something, a march, now all of a sudden, you know, the move-along law doesn't work anymore.
It's not necessarily a bad strategy.
It doesn't work.
You know.
They used it in Portland. That's how they got their Dignity Village, because every time the homeless were told to move along, they turned it into a march.
Right, although they also camped illegally and risked arrest every time they stopped. So it's a mistake to suggest that they were trying to act within the law. They weren't. They were acting. I mean, they were trying to actually act probably within the. I don't want to create an account that I'm not really aware of that it's truth of. But, you know, they may have been trying to create accords with the community and respect the community's feelings in any particular area they stay.
Well, the drum circle moved along when they eventually found a spot.
Of a kind, yeah. In any case, you're listening to Free and Robert on Free Radio Santa Cruz. We got about half an hour left here. Perhaps you have some thoughts. Perhaps you have some updates that are coming up. I think that almost covers the report from the Santa Cruz 11, the final four, who are now going to be showing up again in court at 1:30 tomorrow in Department 6. That's down at 701 Ocean Street.
I think I'll go. This sounds interesting.
Yeah, well, I may do that, too. I'm not sure. I kind of was, you know, holding up my energy because I was expecting to have 2 weeks.
Oh, wait a minute. There's going to be a rowdy storm tomorrow.
There is going to be a heavy storm tomorrow. So we may not be able to get down there.
I'm on a bus and stuff. That'll drench me.
And, even if the buses are running. Let's see if anything else. I'm kind of looking over my notes here. Keith McHenry, again, as I was saying before, I think is turning the spotlight back where it needs to go, mm-hmm. which is...
The real villain.
On Wells Fargo. On Wells Fargo. And what is, and more important, real villain locally. Mm-hmm. What are they doing here in Santa Cruz that, you know, we need to know about? And he apparently is going to spend the time that none of the rest of us have taken the time or energy to do, if he does in fact do this, to actually get a listing of all the properties Wells Fargo is foreclosed on in Santa Cruz. And so that should be interesting, because see, that really, his suggestion after the bank, these phony prosecutions came down 2 months after the peaceful occupation ended, there was, you know, there was a 3-day occupation mm-hmm. that ended with no violence,
right?
Nobody got hurt, nobody got injured,
and most people got away.
And I think probably the original people who did any of the so-called the vandalism wasn't just so-called; it was vandalism. Although, if you compare it to the kind of, you know, immense daily vandalism to mm-hmm. people's lives done
exactly.
by Wells Fargo,
or the
police. It's just it's ridiculous. You want to compare that? So. I say it's probably worth a look if you can brave the rain. If you can't, mm-hmm. I will probably try to report on it on Sunday. I may try to post something on Santa Cruz Indie Media about the issue. And there's also a website. It's santacruz11.blogspot.com, which is the new Santa Cruz 11 website. You can go there and you can get information about what's cooking with that. So... also, I've heard from an old activist, Steve Weiss, over in San Jose, who's looking into housing. He was a home health activist from early 2000, 2001, when we were actually riding pretty high. Doing it. We had twice as many people at meetings, although
it's getting bigger now.
The meeting yesterday at the Huff meeting was very small. It was raining. It's true. I was hoping you'd be there, because after all, you are a strong supporter.
Well, like I said, I got drenched getting there.
You got drenched. Well, we also have some street interviews, which I think are the heart and soul of our show here. And so why not play them? Makes sense. There's also for those who are interested, there's an organizing meeting of the Santa Cruz Sanctuary Camp. It's another Brent Adams poster event. Brent makes the best posters. And it's happening, according to the poster, first and third Wednesdays at 6 p.m. at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, 612 Ocean. But I think on Sunday he's having a meeting out at the Jungle House for a community campout. Brent is a man who really has been unjustly accused in the Santa Cruz 11 case. Mm-hmm. And he's also a guy who has done a lot of work around drum circles. He's taken tickets for his band Love Gutter that drove him away from Pacific Avenue. I won ticket, a $450 ticket, which he brought up at City Council. But I'll finish that sentence as soon as I listen to this caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, before you go telling anybody that they can listen to your show on Sunday, you might want to tell your audience that... this weekend we might be off the air due to technical difficulties, and we will be back on the air as soon as we possibly can.
Will we be off the stream as well as off the air?
We will not be off the stream.
So I will tell that, and thank you, Dennis. You'll be coming in shortly for more music and mayhem.
I'll be as tall as I always am.
Excellent. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And indeed, there will be some technical updates happening with Free Radio this weekend. Which means that you can't hear this show on the air. You'll have to go to freakradio.org or later go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, and check the archive.
You know, recently it's become very important that Free Radio broadcast their signal, because if you listen to Free Radio on the stream, the NSA knows you're listening to Free Radio.
Uh-huh.
But if you listen to it on a private receiving radio, they don't know.
Well, frankly, I've always wanted to be looked at by the NSA. I'm kind of prime material, and I'm hoping that, you know, I mean, a decent job, possibly some an old-timer advice from an old geister like me, Geister or Keister or something like that.
I don't care myself, but for those who do care, that is a safe way to listen to free radio.
And that is another issue that came up, the surveillance issue at the Santa Cruz City Council at the oral communications period. Again, the ACLU, which has been largely moribund, almost completely moribund around local civil liberties issues, with a few minor exceptions. A couple of people spoke about the ACLU-sponsored Surveillance City Forum, which kind of took off from John Malkin's Good Times article, pointing out the what I call the deceptive surveillance license identification stuff that Santa Cruz Police Department got without its being identified as such on the agenda. We have a caller. My goodness, I think we have a caller. Nope, call back. We'll still listen to you. I mean, you can hear us. We can hear you. And these two speakers did come to the oral communications period, which was, you know, very short. Well, it was half an hour long, but there were so many people there that people only got 2 minutes. And again, Mayor Rattlesnake Robinson, Rattlesnake's not quite the right word for it. It's a little too...
But it starts with an R.
It does start with an R, but we're looking for something a little more that really reflects her hairdo and so forth. She's big on the hairdo stuff.
Ridiculous?
Ridiculous. All right, we do have a caller. Let's see if we can get this caller in. You're on Free Radio, caller. Welcome.
Well, hey, Uncle Robert. This is David Silva.
Hey,
David Minton Silva. Just calling to say that it's been a fun show listening to you guys. I always say, you know, hey, the revolution must go on, but we must remember to laugh, you know. And I'm saying that in all seriousness.
Oh. Yeah, I appreciate that, David. Laughable as your comment is.
No, David.
But your guests are always great, and hearing the people that you bring on to talk on your radio show, the people that I've been meaning to meet up with and talk to, and here I get to listen to them with my mouth shut for a change.
Well, you know, we are still waiting for your update from the vets, which you've been promising us for about a year and a half now, and by what's that?
That event, yes.
So, you know,
my memory is very select.
I see. Well, you're honing your material, I see.
Yes, that must be it.
Not quite yet ready for prime time, but waiting.
I'll let you peek at the preprint.
Well, if you find some more information, I know that we had Bob Patton on, and he talked about how there was a continued turmoil, particularly on Wednesday at the Vets Memorial Building, because of the new harsh management there, which was even outdoing the old Tim Bratton management, which apparently was, you know, a cause of some concern.
They're using that place to have a schedule of its own, which means like a third schedule that veterans on the street have to like conform to in order to be able to get any benefits. And if they do one, they don't get the two of the other. If they do two, they don't get the one of the other. And it's just a bunch of nonsense out there. It's insane. It's almost impossible to be a homeless veteran and survive today. I'm surprised we don't have a revolution already, Uncle Robert.
Well, I would love to, probably wouldn't love to see revolution, I being a person who lives indoors warmly and comfortably, but there are some probably...
You're part of our cultural revolution, Robert.
You mean like in China, 1967, perhaps?
No, I mean like the cultural department within the revolution.
Oh, I see. Well, culture, that's what... You know what Goebbels
said
about...
Yeah, I meant like cultural revolution like in China. Of course, I'm a Maoist at heart. You know,
well, you know
I'm
what?
Softy,
you know what? You know
I'm
what?
A softy faggot Maoist. So what kind of softy faggot Maoist am I? It's hard to say.
I don't know, but I know that I gotta get this in. I've been trying for a few minutes, and I will. That the infamous, well-known Minister of Propaganda in the Third Reich, Josef Goebbels, had this to say about culture. When I see culture, I reach for my gun. That's what he said. That's interesting. Because that's when one of those street activists...
That's pretty smart talk for a fact.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Thank you, David, for calling in.
Okie dokie, okie.
All right, man.
You know, the fact that David's a veteran or there's other homeless veterans, they are allowed to vend on the street without a permit.
That's correct. I don't know if the time, place, and manner rules apply to them or not, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. I don't really
and that really is the issue.
But who's going to fuck with a vet? I mean, come on. They served our country. They risked our lives, you know?
A lot of people have been getting tickets who are vets, at least in the past decade.
That's a crime.
And it's, I mean, a number of people have. I remember Robert Hutchinson. And others who at least claim to have been vets, you know, and they also are people who are notoriously outspoken, and they don't mind saying, I'm an adult and I have the right to carry a bottle of alcohol or even to drink alcohol, you know, which is, you know,
a crime.
It's an adult prerogative unless you're homeless, and it's not, you know, you're not allowed to do that.
No one can drink in public on a street.
That's right. But since the homeless are always in public, it is a direct,
yeah, that's where can they drink?
It's a criminalization.
Yeah, they have
homeless.
No alternative.
And it's also an attempt to infantilize them and treat them like some kind of you know, super bad people because they do what everybody does, only under more private circumstances.
Exactly.
And we're not even talking about bad behavior. We're talking about an open container, which is not bad behavior at all. It's an open container, whatever that's worth. So, let's get down with whatever the heck this is. Yeah, let's see how this goes. It's a little something from Brianna Brewer, who's a street activist who has gotten some hard times from Officer Azua some time back. And that whole issue hasn't been resolved either. A lot of issues haven't been resolved. Officer Hernandez is drawing a gun on Jasmine at the Salvation Army on the 26th of November last year. Richard Hardy being slammed to the sidewalk by Officer Vasquez, which Brent Adams got on video. Good for you, Brent, back in the last spring. Anyway, let's hear a little music, and I'll be back. Treat me somehow. And that was Brianna Brewer. And, you know, she's got a mellow sound. She plays well. She actually was at the last protest. She was doing some strumming in front of the coffee roasting company. And I again encourage people. I went on Yelp today and tried to mention that, well, I like the coffee roasting company's open bathrooms to customers, at least, which is a change from its policy of the previous two decades when it didn't have open bathrooms. And I like the new furniture that's in there. And I like the roasting company generally. You know, it's a nice place. I don't like the idea of backpacks being banned there, homeless people being treated badly, and it also seems to me a sickness that spreads through the town. It happens in different places. People, it comes accepted, becomes the new normal. It's wrong. And
a lot of people don't know about it.
Yeah, so that. Yeah, I mean, and it isn't being covered by the Sentinel, isn't being covered by the alternate weeklies, isn't being covered by the, you know, mainstream progressive organizations. ACLU couldn't give a shit about it, even though they've been told about it. And but I have recommended, and I did write today on Yelp, a discussion that said, you know, I really encourage I gave the coffee roasting company 2 stars. Probably should have given them 0.5 star, but out of the 5 stars you can give them, saying I like the various things they are, but they got to stop this backpack discrimination. And I recommend that everybody who goes to a coffee shop concerned about this issue ask what they do with backpacks. And if they say we allow people to have backpacks, and if you see that's actually the case as well, it's good to open your eyes and not just take the manager's word, then write something up on Yelp commending them for it. Or suggesting it's a mistake if they have a discriminatory policy.
Walk right out.
I mean, if
or you can walk right out, but Yelp is a way of publicizing what you do.
Oh, right.
Yelp is a sort of an online service that, in case people don't know what Yelp is, it's a, you know, a restaurant critiquing service. You can hear what other people's experiences are in restaurants. I'm not always the best at, you know, mastering the internet around these issues, but
he does eat in restaurants an awful lot.
I do eat in restaurants. I've been known to even patronize. Well, before they threw me out, Lulu Carpenter's. I used to hold meetings at Lulu Carpenter's at one time. I think we used to meet anyway. I don't know if we held meetings. Huff
the
is
the first Huff protest I went to was in front of Lulu Carpenter's. That's kind of isolated at the end of
it is.
It's not a very good place.
But they were going after, as I recall, a man and his bunny rabbit on the on the sidewalk, a disabled guy, for panhandling on the sidewalk, which he had a panhandling sign. And I think Manthri Srinath is a very outspoken owner of not just Lulu Carpenter's, but Lulu Carpenter's, on the square, whatever it's called. There's 2 Lulu Carpenter's in Santa Cruz. One's over on Front Street in Cooper. And then there's one up in Scotts Valley called the Coffee Cat or something. And it's he didn't like panhandlers, and he was very strong and outspoken about it. And he also is, of course, very strong and outspoken about his own coffee shop. He has closed up all the outlets, so if you're going to use a computer, you can only do it for as long as the battery lasts. I've been told this. So.
Keep the people moving. You know, the issue of coffee houses is important to the homeless because there's really nowhere for them to go. I mean, they've been thrown out of the homeless service center during the day. Well, you know, I mean, parks, what if it's raining? It pretty much leaves just coffee house. You can't afford a restaurant. A coffee house, a homeless person could, you know, a couple bucks for coffee. You know, they have somewhere warm to stay for a while.
That's true. That's
right. All right, Robert, I got to take it off.
Thanks for coming in, Free. And if you want to call and you have any comments, please do. I've got about 12 minutes left in the show. 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Catch me off air if you want to say something in private, so to speak. Call me on the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'll probably be at the 1:30 Judge Burdick denouement, where the judge is trying to negotiate a deal between, or pressure a deal between, the district attorney's office and the Santa Cruz 11 final 4 defendants. That's going to be in court tomorrow at 1:30 in 701 Ocean Street at the county courthouse. So I may be going there. Let's hear a little something, though, from the Huff meeting yesterday. Ran into Boots and Pirate Jeff, and they had something to tell me.
So I'm here at the Huff meeting at the Sub Rosa. It's the 26th of February on 2014. It's raining outside. We have one dog and 2 people who are at this particular table. Your name, sir?
Pirate Jeff.
And, of course,
Boots again.
And, of course, the pooch that is licking the tape recorder.
Hades.
and Haiti is the dog.
No, so, I think it's ice and white. Okay, are the pencil ones?
We have a sign fighting to exist. The situation, and this is the sign you two have held up.
Yes, we're about to. We just made it. We just made it, and we're going to hold it up as soon as opportunity.
What you mean, like in 3 days when it stops raining?
Yeah, whenever, maybe even during the rain if we're under something.
We are harassed daily by police for performing. He is unacknowledged as a performer. We are not allowed to perform together or with my dog. The police refuse to follow their own rules. The police enforce the rules selectively. The police react with hostility when questioned. We followed their rules. We do not cause trouble. We are not drunks, junkies, or tweakers. We just want to exist. We need your help to keep Santa Cruz weird, not to mention to not be harassed any further. That's called fighting to exist. Sounds good. Any updates? How did you sleep last night? Where did you sleep last night, if you wish to discuss it?
We slept at the Red Church last night. We weren't sure when the rain was going to start, so we slept there just to be safe. It's got good overhangs.
The night was dry, but after they kicked us out at 6 in the morning, it started to rain. So... had to deal with that.
But you say they kicked you out in a nice manner?
Oh, yeah, they're polite about it. It's just, you know, they got their little kids' school, so everyone's got to be out early. But
you weren't harassed during the night?
No, it's safe to sleep there.
And how many people would you say were sleeping there?
I don't know, 10 to 12 on an average.
And I should mention that I did speak with Joel Miller, Pastor Joel Miller, yesterday, or Monday, actually, at the Red Church meal, and... he told me that, contrary to what had been told by Ian, the sextant, who's employed by Joel, or is a volunteer there, that you are, if you're homeless, not harassed for sleeping on the property, but you have to be gone by about 6. I think first alarm security guards come and wake people up, based on the theory that it would traumatize preschool children to see homeless people sleeping on the property. We don't want to disillusion them at so early an age. Pretty ridiculous stuff. But in any case, as long as you don't engage in illegal or violent behavior there, according to Joel Miller, you're welcome to stay there. That's what I understand to be the case. On the other hand, police will be called if there's instances of fighting or presumably illegal drug use, even though it's perfectly legal. It's not legal, but it's perfectly standard for people to use the forbidden drugs in their own homes when they are privileged enough to have them, unlike the rest of the impoverished community, although it's likely that those outside are the ones who are most likely to need self-medication, although it isn't always the best thing to do either, for sure. Anyway, so if you need a place to stay at night, according to what I've heard, and again, I guess this will no doubt depend to some extent on circumstances, but as of Monday night, and as of apparently Wednesday afternoon, from we hear from Pirate Jeff here, the Red Church at Calvary Episcopal at Cedar and Lincoln, across from the Nickelodeon and Jack's, is not a legal place. You may still get a camping ticket. But the police apparently have not been giving camping tickets there either. Or at least I haven't heard of that happening. I've heard of camping tickets being given elsewhere in town. It's a touchy situation. You have to judge it, you know, based upon how it has to be felt out. And often when a spot is mentioned, as I'm mentioning it here on the air, it gets blown up, and that means it becomes a spot where then becomes the focus of police attention. So I would encourage people to be cautious and careful around that too. But it's not. I don't think it's any big secret, so I mention it anyway. Let's hear some more from yesterday in the aftermath of the Huff meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Yeah. That's your estimate too, Boots?
Yeah, more people sleep there when it rains. It gets pretty crowded. But it's, again, good, safe, dry.
And we've been talking with
Pirate Jeff.
And, of course,
Boots.
I thought it was a longer interview. A previous interview I had with Boots and Pirate Jeff discussed the behavior of CSO Barnett, who yesterday reportedly, and I was actually shown the citations, ticketed one or both of them for sitting on the sidewalk of Pacific Avenue near Laurel Street in front of the building that is vacant and thus not being used by anybody, and so it's not one that people need to come in and out of. This was in the rain in order to drive them away. And he also told them that he would prefer to see people like them not in town. You might say, well, you know, everyone has free speech, including officers of the law. The problem is, officers of the law set a standard. And officers of the law speak with the force of lethal force behind them. So it's a different matter when I say I'd rather not see you in town and when a cop says that. And that's why I regard the kind of statements I hear CSO Barnett making as being particularly dangerous. If anyone can document this in a clearer way, put it on video, put it on audio, please do. Please post it on YouTube, link it to other websites like Santa Cruz Indie Media, and let's document just what kind of hate crime under official auspices is going on in Santa Cruz. That's what we need to do. So I'm going to end the show with what I normally begin it with, which is the singing by Five of the song Land, which I usually do at the beginning of the show, but now it's going to be at the end of the show. I think I'm repeating myself. Obviously, I need to go do something else for a while.
President raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question.